They want me to get rid of my dog. Can they do that?
I'm being fined for leaving my garage door open too long.
What are covenants? Do I have any rights?
Help, I feel like I've left the American zone.
If you want the answers to those questions, join me, Shu Bartholomew, and my guests on The Commons every Saturday from 2 to 3 right here on WBR Fairfax Radio. We'll ask the experts and we'll untangle the truth about what's left of our property rights.
On the Commons is a weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory membership homeowners associations. Join us as we explore this relatively new world of controlled living, which includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes. Living in a common ownership development means giving up the American dream. It means giving up your constitutional rights and control over your most valuable asset, your home. Living in a homeowners association means leaving the American zone. This is On the Commons, and I am Shu Bartholomew. Radio Fairfax, joining us today, we have Jerry Berg. Jerry lives in Kansas, and he's got quite a story to tell. And he's going to be sharing his story with us today. Jerry, thank you so very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
Violence in HOAs is quite commonplace, and you know that from personal experience.
Yes, from my own personal experience as a victim and as witnesses in my own HOA, and then as a result of working with the Kansas legislature, I have heard of a lot of witnesses testify concerning being victims of violence in HOA circumstances.
Well, tell us your story, because your story is so typical.
It's hard to start without giving you a little background, but back in 2005, when I was a property manager, a commercial realtor property manager for my own HOA, a CPA, a single woman, asked to review the records of a club that we ran as part of, not we ran, but the directors on the board ran a private club, a bar, if you will, for profit. They made profit off of it, and she asked to see those records, and I didn't think anything of it. I knew the procedure. I wasn't going to let her take records. I was going to let her copy them. And in the middle of that, one of the directors broke in and put a chokehold on me and then physically attacked her, committing assault and battery, caused her some injuries and tore her clothes and things like that. I was shocked that that anyone would do something like that. And it was all because the board and that particular director had been embezzling funds out of the cash drawer from the club. That led to her involvement in the movement in Kansas for HOA owners' rights, open meetings laws, open budget laws. Her name was Sylvia McCombs. She's now a chief financial officer for a real estate brokerage here in Wichita. And that got her involved in the movement of owners' rights, and she kind of drugged me in. And in 2009 and 10, we worked on the Kansas Uniform Common Interest Owners Bill of Rights Act, which became effective January 1 of 2011. Because of that, I had started, no longer I was in the property management business, but I had started looking at the use of common funds to benefit the directors rather than the other owners, kind of selective use of our money in violation of our covenants. And I went to the management or the new management office and demanded to see records and found a balance sheet that showed a missing approximately $20,000 for money that should have gone to fix certain kinds of damages, like my fireplace, which was about to fall off of the building. And I realized that the new property manager, which was a, I hate to say debenched, he was an involuntarily retired judge. For
I like the way you put that. Go on.
Well, that's the way it was recorded in our records, is that he was he faced involuntary retirement from the bench. In any event, He had taken all of the money and was rebuilding his mother's condominium, which was not on the waiting list for those kinds of jobs. And I took a picture of it, and the office people called him out at the site. And then later that evening, my wife and I went over to take pictures before they closed up the construction so I could get pictures of the barcodes of, higher grade materials than were normally used and that kind of thing. And while I was taking the photographs, I had no idea he was anywhere around, but he come running out of the house with a crowbar in his hand, screaming at me to quit taking pictures. And I just looked at him, standing on my own property, common property, taking pictures of my property, common property, and he started beating on me with a crowbar because I would not stop. And he ended up hitting me, the police officer said 10 times, I don't recall how many, but it was a lot. And I was taken to the hospital, and he was, for a very short time, taken to jail. He kind of bought his way out of that thing. But nonetheless, I ended up with some pretty significant scars.
So if you don't remember how many times you were beaten, that must have been one hell of a beating. I'm sure a crowbar is no light thing.
Well, police officer said that when they pulled my shirt up, you could see the exact shape of the crowbar. It had that crook on it in three places really bad on my back, and I was stabbed in my ribs. So it was my arms, both sides, my back. And then when I tried to run away, he went for my head, and then I turned around and he just quit and walked away. I'm a rather large man, and he's not, and I think he saw the look in my eyes that I wasn't going to take it much longer. But I never did touch him. I never raised a hand. I had no offensive wounds or no retaliation. I just tried to block the blows, and so that's what happened.
How long were you in the hospital? Did it require surgery? What happened?
No, I was just there through the night. They had to make sure that the puncture wounds didn't break my ribs and some things like that. No, I was not in the hospital for very long.
So he went to jail briefly.
Yes, and then he hired a former district attorney and got the DA to not press charges against him.
Why did the DA choose not to press charges?
Well, that has to do with my history. Yeah, cronyism. If you think that police officers protect police officers, you should see what judges do to protect judges.
So was this story ever told?
As far as you mean, on any national media or anything?
National media and local newspapers. First time this is being told, the skyline.
Right. First time it's being broadcast, yes. There are some people on television who have been following the case, and of course the case is still pending. We just had the Supreme Court of the state of Kansas say that the interlocutory appeal trying to stop the trial was rejected. So I won in the Supreme Court just about a week and a half ago. And as a matter of fact, we're waiting on the mandate, which follows in about two more weeks from now, and then we'll get it set for trial. It's been over 4 years since I was beaten, and maybe we'll get a trial yet this year.
So you've been trying to go to court all this time?
I've been representing myself, and yes, and we went first, we filed it in state court, then they turned around and they took it up to federal court. That took a couple of years, and then after that, it went back to state court, and they have now taken the attorney who represents the association, the condominium association, and also he represents the management company. And he represents several of the bully board of directors personally. And the state court threw him out of the case for inappropriate conduct, unethical conduct, and sanctioned him and threw out all of their countersuits, which were frivolous against my wife and I. But they threw all those out as punishment, and they appealed that all the way to the Kansas Supreme Court, and we just won that I represented myself without an attorney and won that about 2 weeks ago.
Well, congratulations on that. You were telling me last night that some of the stuff they did was just absolutely horrendous, filing liens and doing all that kind of wonderful stuff to you, which is typical of what HOAs tend to do.
Yes, they after this lawsuit, they filed liens against my house claiming that I did not pay things that I did not owe, and they never gave me an opportunity to appear in front of the board, never gave me a chance to defend myself, and put the liens against my house. And when they said that I owed this money, I decided to run for the board. Well, then they passed a ex post facto law, a rule that said I couldn't run for the board because I owed the money. Then they said I couldn't even talk to my neighbors in the course of the political campaign. And so I wrote letters to all of the people they said I couldn't talk to, and they fined me for each of those letters. It ended up being 71 maximum assessments. It came in at over $7,000. And, of course, I refused to pay those, and they tried to take our home. And as a result of their trying to take our home, I filed a second lawsuit against that lawyer and several of the board members and the person who beat me with the crowbar in the first case. And that case is still pending as well.
For your information, there are two cases, one in Virginia, and that's a Supreme Court decision, and one in Rhode Island, where the courts, and that was on remand from the Supreme Court, where the court said fining by an HOA was unconstitutional. Both of those cases are on my website.
I'll be glad to look at those. That would be most interesting because the constitutionality issues have been raised in both lawsuits. In the first lawsuit where I was beat with a crowbar, I also filed for injunctive relief to have the rights to access to records that the Uniform Act says I should have. And also in the second lawsuit, I filed suit for violation of my constitutional rights to free speech and free press and to be protected from ex post facto laws. And by the way, those causes of action have been upheld. We're still waiting, of course, to go to trial on those, but they have not been thrown out on any kind of summary judgment or appellant procedure. The courts have said they were valid lawsuits. So I guess we'll let a jury decide how much money it's going to take to stop these people from doing this kind of thing. But there's a lot of money involved. People don't realize that.
Yeah. The industry just put out their latest stats, and they claim that HOAs generate $70 billion, with a B, dollars annually. But that, I don't think, includes all of the fines and the liens and the foreclosures and all of the theft and the kickbacks and all of that wonderful stuff that homeowners have got to keep, you know, paying up again.
I was the president of a property management company as a commercial realtor, specializing in condominium associations for 4 years, and we literally decided, my partner and I decided to get out of the business because you really could not compete ethically with those who were corrupt, and it was a large amount of money. I got to be very careful about what I say about my own HOA here, especially since everything I say about this association is going to devalue my own property.
Nonsense.
Well, you can't sell any of the units out here now because of everything. But like, to give you an example, we had a $1.5 million lodge, which had if you imagine, it's like a country club with, you know, indoor, outdoor pools, hot tubs, saunas, bar, you know, kitchen, two meeting rooms, party rooms, things like that. And it was fully 100% insured, had a very mysterious fire. I'm sure it was accidental, but nonetheless, it burned it down to the ground. And the board so mismanaged or allowed for corruption in the building of it and the rebuilding of it that now, even though we had 100% replacement insurance, we have a $387,000 clubhouse and have lost all of those amenities, and they won't even attempt to account for why they lost over $1 million.
So did the insurance pay up?
Well, they paid for a new building, but they didn't pay to rebuild the one we had because, well, let's just put it this way. Some friends of the contractors and the board appear to have made a tremendous amount of money that was not warranted by any business practice I'm aware of.
So it's it's not anything you say. It's the way these common ownership, if you will. And a lot of my listeners are going to ding me for using that word, common ownership. But you do own that property in common.
Right.
The mismanagement of that is what's going to devalue property.
Oh, yes. And, well, as an example, we've had 5 arsons out here that we know were arsons, intentional fires, that have just shot our insurance rates skyrocketed and over $60,000 a year increase in our premiums on our common property. Just from the violence and the criminal activity that goes on in what I like to refer to as my home Gulagog. It's a ghetto that I live in now.
We're talking to Jerry Burke. Jerry was beaten up by a board member and is talking a little bit about some of the issues and the problems in his association. We have not named your association, but... Now, you said that you were aware of that personally because you were beaten up and you ended up having to go to the hospital and, you know, you were quite traumatized by what happened.
Yes.
And what you were doing was trying to find out why your unit was not being repaired, but all of the money was going into one of the board members' parent mother's units.
Actually, it was a property manager who lived on site that owned a unit. He was a former board member, but he was a property manager that beat me and a property manager that owned 3 units out here, and it was one of his own units that his mother lived in.
So he used the money to upgrade his unit. And was your fireplace ever repaired, fixed?
Yeah, eventually.
That question, huh?
Several years later, what happened was it was falling into my backyard, which has a very extensive goldfish and koi pond. And so I took a very bright fire engine, kind of a red-green and rope and pulley, and put a very big rope up there holding the fireplace from falling off of the building with a sign on it. Your HOA dues at work, and about 3 weeks after that, I finally got my fireplace fixed.
That works, doesn't it? We used to do things like that, too.
Your
HOA dues at work for you, right?
Yeah, well, you had to, you know, make it public in order to get them to do anything, but I wished I could say that this CPA that was beaten and I were the only ones out here, but there is quite a history of violence to other owners out here if they question the board. One of them was an 82-year-old woman, Liz Haynes, who simply decided to vote against a proposition of the board, and after the meeting was over and the vote failed, the membership vote failed, this same person that beat me approached her, lawyer, judge, and at that point, he was president of the association and no longer property manager. And he got angry at her and shoved her and started cussing at her because she voted against him. Shoving an 82-year-old woman just shocked me. Then on March 5th of 2013, the perennial control of the money out here is a professor from Wichita State University, a professor of philosophy. I think he spells finance with a P-H. But in any event, he refused to allow my wife to attend a budget meeting and literally took his rear end and knocked her out of the doorway onto the ground and then locked the door so she could not come in, knocked her down. There have been 2 suicides that we know are related to the harassment of members of this bully board.
Oh, really?
Yes. It's just horrible. people can't imagine, you know, that there is that kind of harassment to the point that people just can't take it anymore. Now, I can't think of a single incident of violence that wasn't related directly or indirectly to some form of board corruption. Even those things that I read about in other condominium complexes in Kansas all tend to tie back to that evil of corruption for power or money.
And the police don't do much, do they? The common answer is, well, you agreed to this. Did you agree to be beaten up and bullied and harassed and pushed to the point of committing suicide?
No, none of those people agreed to that. And the problem is, and that's why we went to the lengths of trying to get the Kansas Uniform Common Interest Owners Bill of Rights Act. We were hoping that we would be able to get such an ironclad law that we may not be able to get criminal actions against these people, but at least we would have the ability to take them to court and win. Well, come to find out, with all the money they have, if I wasn't law trained, I have a doctorate degree in law, a juris doctorate degree, if I wasn't trained in the law, I could not have afforded a 4-year litigation over an assault and battery with, you know, I had about $3,500 worth of medical bills and $1,000 worth of ambulance bills. But, you know, but I could not have afforded to file a lawsuit and to pursue it if I couldn't represent myself. So there's a real disparity in the ability of having rights and enforcing one's rights. Those are two entirely different things.
Right. I so completely agree with you. Why is it, you're an attorney, why is it that when there's something like this in an HOA, when you've got crime, clearly beating someone up is criminal. Why is it that all of a sudden the police cannot get involved? Why is it that the real government cannot prevent it, protect you?
Well, you know the answer to that. I mean, it's no surprise to you after you read about everything that's happened in Florida and Nevada, and I've read about the cases in Massachusetts. Basically, they hire very powerful, very high-dollar, corrupt lawyers. And it's very hard for people that aren't so stubborn that they're willing to spend $100,000 to recover $25,000. You just aren't going to beat that system when you have corrupt lawyers and corrupt judges. And I'm not talking about our bench. Please don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that we have any corrupt judges on bench right now, but the man who beat me was a graduate of the National Judicial College, and he was a state judge. So, you know, that's bad. I mean, people just can't fight that.
You know, that sounds like somebody who's well-balanced wouldn't behave that way.
I believe you're probably correct.
I'm probably correct. I think I am correct, Jerry.
Well, I'm kind of cautious. I don't want to call somebody crazy and then get sued for slander. So.
I'm not calling anybody crazy. I just think that sometimes you need help.
Well, let me guess.
Sometimes
anger management.
Sometimes you need help because we all have problems. I mean, I'm angry with a choice, and nobody's ever done anything to me, so I'm not coming at this from a personal perspective. But I just think the whole concept is so rotten that somebody has got to be able to put it out there.
Well, let me give you an example of the kind of, to answer your question as directly as I can, and then I'll tell you about an excellent set of judges that have gone out of their way to try to help us. I was sued 13 times under secret court orders that I did not have any notice prior to the court order, no opportunity to be heard. Usually they were protection from abuse orders that they went and got under the the law that allows them to try to protect women. And these are mostly men, but they were all board members that went and got these secret court orders, ex parte orders, and then I would have to hire a lawyer and defend them and win them. They never won one on the evidence that established that I was ever doing anything wrong, but they kept me out of meetings, kept me from getting records by filing these court orders. getting temporary orders, and by the time they'd get to a hearing, a year had gone by, and then they'd just file another one. Well, when this went to a hearing in federal court, a full federal senior judge in Kansas, Catherine Verrattle, and her magistrate judge, Ken Gale, went so far as to issue an order that said no one in this HOA or any party to these lawsuits can go get an ex parte order in any court from any judge or they'll go to jail. Now, that is how crooked these lawyers were that would go to court with their crony judge buddies and get a temporary order to keep people from going to board meetings.
That's,
Another example, I was arrested twice and put in jail. One time for a parking ticket that they never could find. While I was in jail, I was served with another one of these ex parte orders, but I was arrested on a false warrant. And then the second time, I was arrested for walking my dog along my lake on my property, and they said that I was violating some PFS order that I didn't even know about, and said I was within 100 foot of this judge, and I didn't even see him. Never knew he was there. Of course, that all got thrown out of court, but I spent 2 days in jail.
What's PFS?
Protection from stalking.
Protection from stalking.
Yeah, they went and got an order saying that I was stalking somebody, and all it took was them lying about it, and I wasn't, of course, and they couldn't prove it, but it didn't change the fact that I spent a couple of days in jail.
What happened to the concept of innocent until proven guilty?
Well, when you've got judges that can, and when you've got lawyers and judges who can go get orders that say, we're going to do this temporarily to protect everyone from this monster, and of course they have no evidence to back it up if they sign out false affidavits, that's why the Supreme Court of the state of Kansas threw out their appeal. They specifically found, the district court judge did, and the Supreme Court upheld it, that they had made false affidavits after false affidavits after false affidavits based upon lies that they generated just to try to get orders to keep me from trying to protect my rights and trying to keep from losing my home. So far, I can't sell my home, but I've at least been able to keep it, and my wife and I are, we have the biggest condominium in the complex, and it's a very nice place. We've spent a lot of money on it, but if I don't keep fighting, I will lose my home. People that don't have the ability to defend themselves in courts of law are just at the mercy of the Community Association Institute or the local association or the corrupt lawyers they hire.
You were instrumental in getting a Bill of Rights, and how you come up with Kuna Cobra, I will never know, and I will leave it at that. But you came up with this Homeowner Bill of Rights. There are 20 actual rights that are listed. Well, 19, number 15 is not there, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. Why did you start doing this? Who did you start working with? How is it working out? Can you tell us a little bit about it, please?
Yes. We were inspired by the people in Florida who had organized, and of course they ran headlong into a multi-million dollar obstructionist movement by the CAI. But in Kansas, we had a lady, I believe you know her, she's somewhat famous on the homeowners' rights front. Her name is Nyla Ridings.
Yes.
She's a retired airline hostess and just the biggest dynamo you'll ever run into. She's so sweet and soft-spoken, but she will not be deterred. Well, she recruited this Sylvia McCombs, a CPA, and a legislator, Terry Huntington, out of Kansas City. And then they got people from Topeka and Salina, Wichita, Olathe, basically the bigger cities or metropolitan areas that had these kind of bully boards in place. And one of them, of course, was this notorious place where I live. And so whenever they started organizing their movement to try to get some Bill of Rights, Sylvia told Nyla about me, and she recruited me to be involved because I carried some pretty unique credentials. I was a certified property manager. I was a owner or president of a HOA management company. I had a law degree, and I had a business administration degree from Wichita State University. So, and I knew some of the key legislators. So they put me to work as a lobbyist, more or less, but then I ended up testifying in front of the Kansas Judicial Council, which was sponsoring the bill, and both the House and the Senate, probably as many times as anyone. And in all of that's on the record. You can look it up under the Cuna Cobra or the statute, 58-1401 and thereafter. And so I ended up testifying a lot of times about various aspects. And frankly, I don't think CAI took us seriously. They really did not think we could get the bill passed. And if it hadn't been for a lot of work from Nyla and her crew, and I hate to tell you what we call ourselves, it's kind of a funny name, but we call it the Pink Flamingo Army.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it.
We refer to her as General Nyla. But literally, we were up there when it was on the floor, and we were talking to every legislature we could in the hallways, and finally it passed. And they've tried to repeal it twice now, or modify it, or take the teeth out of it. We didn't get everything we wanted, but it's so much better than anything any other state has. Now, how is it working out? Well, if it would be applied the way it's written, it would be wonderful. The problem is that you can't hire lawyers to prosecute the cases under that act, and the courts have yet to, how can I say this, put real teeth to it. That's why that vacant number 15 so bothers us, and we're trying to go back and get that out of there, so, or get it filled out so that we can get these cases prosecuted by the state attorney general. So far, we haven't had any luck in that regard.
There's a little kernel of hope out there because more and more attorneys are now leaving their practices and going towards representing homeowners in HOAs. There's always been precious few of them, but more and more are starting to do that. They're beginning to see that there is a very definite need for it.
Yes.
One of the big problems has always been money, because associations will use your money to fight you.
Yes.
And some attorneys, I mean, they still have bills and they still need to pay their overhead, and so they're not willing to take them on. But a few of them are saying, wait a minute, we can do this.
Yes.
We can do this. So there's starting to be a shift.
In Kansas, we had a major decision in Kansas City that allowed the attorney to recover their fees under a Consumer Protection Act violation theory. Now that we have Cuna Cobra, we have our Bill of Rights. If we win, then we ought to be able to get our attorney's fees back, and that's difficult to get an attorney to front the money for such a case, but at least he's got the chance of recovering big money at the end. It would be better if we had an ombudsman, if we had an attorney general that was doing some good to help us. But right now, yes, I think it's changing. For years, the only attorneys that took these cases in many states, and I know the lady in Florida that's got one of the lead cases down there, were attorneys that lived in condominiums, and they experienced these bully boards themselves, and they represented themselves, and that's how we got lawyers that started representing other people in a lot of states. And so, yeah, there's a hope. It's getting better, I think, but it's a long, long ways.
It is a long ways, but, and I lost my train of thought. You said something, and I wanted to talk about that, but I lost that train of thought. Oh, I know what. You were talking about getting an ombudsman. Just for everybody to know, the ombudsman, a lot of places have ombudsman, including Virginia. Believe me, CAI comes in and writes the laws. The ombudsman's hands are tied, It is nothing more than a placebo, so I wouldn't go with an ombudsman. I would take it to the attorney, the state's attorney general,
right,
and have them enforce it. You know what, Jerry? We pay taxes. Shouldn't those taxes count for something?
Well, the reason for our taking the tact, and frankly, the head of the property, well, it was the dean of the KU Law School, who was a professor of real estate law and real property law at KU, he saw the need of this so bad, so we went with a Bill of Rights, because under the Constitution of each of our states, we can use the state finances through the Attorney General's office to protect our Bill of Rights, whether it is our right to speech or our right to be able to attend budget meetings at our HOA. If those are defined public Bill of Rights, then we can get the Attorney General to enforce it and to use tax dollars to beat these bully boards and these CAI-sponsored corrupt lawyers. And I don't want to, I'm not saying they're all corrupt, but I'm kind of put a generality there. In my view, there are a lot of highly questionable private lawyers that work for big dollars by the hour representing HOAs, like you said, with our money against us. Now, I believe you're right, but that's what that vacant statute, obviously you've read our Bill of Rights and you saw that number 15 is just blank, it isn't there yet, and that's what that was there for, was to get the Attorney General specifically authorized to enforce these rights. Maybe someday we'll get that changed.
So you want to run through some of these rights for us, Jerry? Tell us a little bit about what those rights are.
Well, sure. I can do it without, you know, going through a bunch of technicalities, but
right,
I will tell you generally. The first thing that starts is that in Kansas we now have mandatory open meetings. They have to give us an agenda in advance and let us attend the meetings, and we have a right to speak about any subject the board is going to vote on before they vote, or it can be set aside as invalid. Another very key right is that we have a right to a real budget, a budget that's based upon expenditures, not a spending plan of how they're going to tax us to death. And Kansas, those were the first two big rights, and of course then from that flow a lot of other things, like they can't call executive sessions or have social club meetings where they decide what they're going to do in a board meeting later. We have rights to preclude them from doing that kind of thing. We have the right to show up at our management company and inspect the records on the spot at that time. No waiting, no nonsense. We get to see all of the financial records that are ours as owners. Let me see. We have a right to a reasonable quorum requirement for membership meetings. We have a right to control who runs our membership meetings. It's not necessarily controlled by the board. There are rights that give us the right for these laws to override injunctive relief or other causes of action. In other words, they can't hire lawyers to file lawsuits to stop us from exercising these rights. It puts this on a higher priority level of law than the tricks CAI is known for. So those are some examples of the rights that we have under this Bill of Rights.
You talked a while ago at the beginning of the show, you mentioned that you were told you could not talk to your neighbors.
Yes.
I've heard this a number of times. They will tell you that you are not allowed to talk to your neighbors, and this comes from a CAI attorney as a rule.
Well, this was I don't know if he was paid for by CAI, but it was our local association attorney who wrote me a letter that he called a cease and desist order, had absolutely no authority for that in the law or from the board, saying that I could not talk to my neighbors, and he listed 80 of my 151 co-owner units that I couldn't talk to. Most of them had never, ever even talked to him. He had no complaint from any of these people in writing in the board. And what they claim that was they now claim in this lawsuit that they passed a rule adopting his letter as their rule. After the fact.
Yeah, you move into this community, and I hate that word in terms of HOAs, because there's nothing community about them, communal about them. They're just absolutely war zones. But
it's like Ward Lucas, I think, is the man who said it, but I don't know who it is in our movement that had made the comment, but this really was a wonderful community when I first moved into it, but you are one election, one vote away from losing all of your rights and some bully board taking over.
We've been saying that.
And that is exactly what happened.
We've been saying that ever since we started doing this show 15 years ago.
Yeah. You're just one vote from being in my shoes.
You're one election away. Because I'll have people come up to me and say, well, Shu, I hear all of these stories that you keep telling. But I want you to know that my association doesn't do that. I live in a great association.
I'm the
board president. I would never do that. They're lying. They must have done something to deserve that. Well, and I look at them and I go, you know what? You're just one election away from having everything turn around.
Correct. And you know, but you were talking about the subject matter you wanted me to address, and I haven't covered everything, but I want to tell you some other things that are so vitally important to my wife and I. We're the proud owner of kind of a rare breed of dog. It's a miniature Australian Shepherd. Works great in a condominium, and we love our dog dearly, and everybody knows how much we love our dog, and our dog has been poisoned twice. Now, fortunately, she's still alive, but we've had to have her hospitalized twice because she's been fed had stuff thrown over the fence that had rat poison in it. And that's not a community when people are so vicious and so mean that they will try to kill your dog.
You know, I interviewed a young lady, and I interviewed her attorney, who actually flew up from Reno to Las Vegas to represent her. And he did it pro bono. He covered the cost of all the flights and everything. But she was so desperately abused. She was on her way to a hearing. And she was walking out, and one of the board members or the local rent-a-cops or whoever came up. She was walking her dog. She was taking her dog with her, or she was walking her dog before going to the hearing. They didn't want her to go to the hearing that the board was having to decide what to do with whatever it was. She didn't do anything wrong, by the way. He shot that dog and killed the dog right in front of her, just right before she went into that hearing. And I mean, the types of things that these people will do in these so-called communities is just absolutely unbelievable.
Let me give you two more examples from our community. People who have been dissidents from the board, people who have been vocal in opposition to this bully board, on two occasions have swerved vehicles to either hit someone or to scare them so bad that they won't go to court. That's happened twice in the last 8 years here in this condominium association.
That happens, Jerry. It happens. It's happened here. There was one young lady who the management came over and literally ran over her foot and broke her toes in the car.
She
didn't have the money to go to the doctor and get her foot set. And this was in Texas.
Yeah, people think, and I think mine is very graphic, when you see if you saw the pictures of, you know, the blood and the holes and my shirt torn and getting beat with a crowbar by a judge is pretty graphic. But it is not at all an isolated incident. I can simply tell you that people do not realize how angry these little dictators become when someone challenges them and says, no more, you're not going to steal my money anymore.
Yeah, if they don't resort to violence, they all become defensive. Yeah. Well, I'm a board member and I don't do that. I'm sorry, you know, not every board member is bad. Every HOA attorney is bad. Some of them are really, really good. But there's enough nastiness, bullying, corruption, abuse, you name it out there. And nobody is really giving it a serious look. We're all looking at it. CAI will say, oh, well, you must have done something to deserve it.
Yeah, well.
Come on, give me a break. Didn't you agree to this, Jerry?
No. and let me, one of the other strange bits of credentials, if you will, I have is that I, in my college career, I got a secular degree in modern religion. And I have, since later in my life, I have become very avid about my beliefs and my faith as a Christian. But that doesn't change the fact that we have run into absolute, how can I say that, dictatorship.
Yes.
In regard to anything that challenges their ability to steal from us, and they get away with it for this reason. Most people who move into condominiums that are controlled by an HOA-type corporation, they move in with the purpose of letting someone else take care of their property. That's why they live there.
Carefree living, right?
And say what?
Carefree living, right?
Yeah, they think it's going to be carefree living, but if you're going to delegate to this bully board or a potential bully board the ability to control your life to that degree, it's just exactly as you have been apparently preaching, that you're one election away from some despot taking over control of that board and bullying people into all kinds of problems, physical and emotional. I felt so bad about Kelly Peterly. She was a lady that lived in our board. She had a autistic son, and she had a babysitter that took care of the autistic son while she was working as a journalist, and they so harassed her and her babysitter and her autistic child, saying that they wouldn't allow them to go to the swimming pool. They harassed them, saying they weren't parking in the right place. Well, she hung herself right by our main street sign of our condominium, right on the road out there. She literally hung herself in front of our condominium sign because she just could not take the harassment anymore.
So this was one of the two suicides you were talking about?
Yes.
What happened?
Nothing. What do you do? She suicided. You can't
prosecute anybody. But was there? No, I understand. But if she was a reporter, did whatever media outlet she worked for, did they do a story on that? Did
no.
they highlight it? Did,
no.
Did any? Was there any investigation? I mean,
yes.
If she had an autistic child, Fair Housing should have been involved right from the very beginning.
They should have. The problem is that you're dealing with some fairly significant lawyers who control and have a lot of influence, and everybody says Wichita is the biggest small town in America, and I think to some degree that's probably true, but there was very little they could do about that. And the other suicide was because it was one corrupt person going to turn another corrupt person in, and rather than face their own corruption, they simply took their own life. I assume that's much like what happened out in Las Vegas. There were several property managers and lawyers that committed suicide out there after they got caught, as I recall.
Well, allegedly committed suicide.
Well, yeah.
You know, there's some question about it. I had Senator Mike Schneider on, and I don't think he believed it right from the very beginning. I think he questioned whether or not those were real suicides or whether there was something a little more to it. And, of course, the police, the FBI, everybody investigated and came back and said, no, it was a suicide. Of course, the guy who hung himself in California before doing that ended up walking around was found naked in his subdivision with both his kneecaps broken. You know, I mean, I'm sure he did that to himself as well, right?
I doubt it.
Come on, Jerry, you're laughing. You don't believe these people when they say, it's a suicide.
It's like this judge says that he was using self-defense when he beat me with a crowbar. Well, it's like the police officer said, how is it self-defense when he could have stayed inside of his house? He had no reason to come out to do that. And I didn't touch him. There was no offensive. It's ludicrous for him to claim that that's self-defense.
He was afraid you were going to shoot him with your camera.
No, he actually says that I gave him a death stare.
Oh, shame on you, Jerry. A death
stare? I mean, it must be a Darth Vader kind of thing where with you got laser eyes or something. I don't know. I don't think a jury is going to buy it.
Don't you wish you had that kind of power?
No, I really don't. To be honest with you, I think a lot of people are afraid of me because I'm outspoken. I'm not the quietest man you'll ever meet. I'm educated beyond my common sense, and I'm 6'7" tall and over 300 pounds. I'm a very big man, and I think I scare people just when I walk in the room sometimes.
But you didn't scare him. He just took a crowbar and went right after you.
Yeah, he did, and I kept honestly thinking, if Jesus can take that thrashing with that cat of nine tails, I can take a whipping with a crowbar. And I knew he wanted me to hit him back so he could sue me, and I just wasn't going to give him the pleasure of striking him. I was going to take my blows, and then I was going to do it civilly. And so far, I've done that.
Well, I admire you. I think you have a tremendous amount of restraint. I don't think if anybody came after me with a crowbar that I would be so generous and turn the other cheek, as it were.
Well, another background that probably helps is that I was a Golden Gloves boxer when I was a young man, and you have to learn to control. When you're a heavyweight boxer, you can't just hit people because they hit you. It's kind of like walking around with a machine gun. So I just don't do it. Since I've been 19 years old, I've never struck a person with a closed fist, and I hope I go to my grave with that record intact.
So you are still under medical care?
Yes, I had a surgery that went surgery trying to correct for some of the damage that was done to my back literally about a week ago, and it didn't go well. There were some traumatic tumors, benign, but they were so bad that they were pinching nerves in my back, and I had to have one of them removed. They were supposed to remove two of them. The other one's about the size of the palm of your hand and about an inch thick.
Wow.
And they're going to have to take me into general anesthesia in the hospital to have that removed. That'll be sometime next month. So, yeah, here it is 4 years after I was beat, and I'm still dealing with really serious issues from the scar tissue. The place on my rib is it's ugly, but it's not, it doesn't hurt unless you touch it. I'm still under medical care to some degree, trying to rectify the damage that was done. I don't think anybody's going to pay me much money for the scar tissue on my back. It's kind of like a scar on a porcupine. When you're my age, you've got too many scars already. It's not like it's some young woman. But in any event, yeah, I am still under some medical care.
Well, apparently the scar is creating some medical problems. It's not an aesthetic thing.
No, it was originally the scar tissue was below the skin, and it wasn't too bad of outside scarring. But in order to get in there and get the tumors out so that I could sleep on my back, they had to create a surgical scar that's about 4 inches long about a week and a half ago. And I like that. And so, yeah, and I'm going to have another one whenever they try to take this bigger one out. But there's no other way to do it. I mean, you can't go in with orthoscopic surgery to move a discus-shaped tumor. You've got to cut and go in and do it.
Jerry, I want to thank you so much for coming on and telling us your story. And I would like you to keep in touch and let me know what happens, because I know you've got some court dates coming up.
Shu, I want to do this. I want to tell you how much those of us that are out here in the trenches appreciate you and all that you've done on the commons, and people like you and Ward Lucas and Nyla Writings, we pin our hopes on someday being able to realize a peaceful way to live in our homes based upon the efforts of people like you, and I want to thank you so much.
Well, with people, I mean, I'm just providing the venue here, but it's people like you who come on and tell your story.
You're far too modest.
And
thank you, Shu.
I thank you, but you will let us know how you make out in court?
I will send you, now that I've got your email and contact information, I will send you those results as they come in.
You are awesome. Thank you very much. Good luck.
And God bless you. Bye-bye.
Thanks to all of you for joining us.
Bye now.
Please check out our website at onthecommons.us. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Now there's lots of open meetings close to Justice 4HO. Those arrogant board members say what they want you to know. The CAI and ULI will help you lose it all. But I wouldn't sell that dream home yet, the writing's on the wall. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Well, we're not afraid or stupid, all your threats mean nothing here. Time marches on, soon you'll be gone, united we'll be there. So put your rules and CCRs up where the sun don't shine, and enjoy those precious golden years, stop messing around with mine. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell. Why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.